Get started. Hi, I'm Jonathan Kern. I'm a developer on the SharePoint product group at Microsoft. I'll be presenting today with my coworker Lionel, who is a program manager also in the SharePoint group. Together with a group of some other folks on the team, we built the theming experience in SharePoint 2013. So we're following a session by Wes Preston that just happened in the same room, and he kind of gave you an overview and how to crawl with changing the look in SharePoint. And what we're going to try to do in this session is move on to the walk and the run. So before we start, I'll cover a little bit about the format of the talk. Just like the other sessions, we'll spend about an hour on the talk, followed by 15 minutes for Q&A. And of course, feel free to blog or tweet anything we talk about today. Just make sure on Twitter to use the hashtags SPC065 and SPC12 so that the rest of the attendees can listen into the conversation. And feel free to mention either Lionel or I in your messages. Please fill out session evaluations after the session on MySPC. We really love to hear your feedback. Put in comments. Those are especially useful. And find us after the talk. We'll probably be running over to ask the experts. And I think we're going to be at the social and collab table. So go ahead and find us. We can answer your questions. And of course, applause is appreciated. We really love it. Good. You're quick learners. So let's see what we're going to take a look at today. We'll start with a little history. Then we'll do a high-level overview of what's new in SharePoint 2013. Then we'll do a deep dive into the theming engine and see what happens under the hood. Next, we'll dive into some code and make a themable master page customization. We'll follow with some tips and gotchas and then do some Q&A. So we'll start with a little history. Way back in SharePoint 2003, you could indeed customize the way SharePoint 2003 looked, and the key tool to do this was FrontPage. You could edit the raw CSS, or you could use the theming tools that were built into the product, and this was pretty cool. It was this great GUI, and you could edit the CSS visually. But it was pretty much, just, as I said, a GUI for CSS. You'd edit each and every style individually, and you could make changes across the board, but kind of hard for end users to dive into. In SharePoint 2007, we continued the same trend. Themes were pretty much a full CSS replacement. To help, the product shipped with some out-of-the-box themes, though, so end users could pick a few out-of-the-box ones, and they'd look pretty good. But making your own theme was quite a challenge. Beyond that, applying a theme had some pretty serious perf implications. It would make your site load a little bit slower because there's just more CSS to load. So far, theming was still a challenge. So in SharePoint 2010, we re-architected the theming engine from the ground up. We did away with CSS replacements and instead built a fully automated engine that would transform the CSS files when you theme the site. To make creating themes easier, we built this engine on the Office client's ThemeX file format so you could make your new themes with PowerPoint. The new engine made it much easier to personalize your sites. The downside is that it didn't really change the look and feel of your site all that much. As you can see, it did some color changes, but the layout stays mostly the same. So to review, theming's really easy for the end user, and it's hard to break things because you're just kind of picking a look and all the hard CSS work is done under the covers. But at the same time, it's a little limited. It can only do basic color changing, and that leaves sites looking a little bit cookie cutter. For us, on the other hand, there's SharePoint Designer, and it's really, really powerful. You can customize almost anything. You can make multiple master pages so that your different sites can look different. But it's not quite for the faint of heart, so end users usually stay far, far away. So now that we've got some background, let's talk about what's new. So first of all, for SharePoint 2013, we've re-architected the theming experience from the ground up. It's now easier than ever for end users to customize their sites, explore their options to do so, and this lets developers and IT pros like yourselves spend time building theme components to empower your end users. And we'll talk more about this shortly. The theming engine's been souped up, too. It's mostly the same engine we shipped in 2010, but we've added some new features, including support for fonts and web fonts, and user-supplied background image. And despite all this added functionality, the engine's faster. It's down from about 30 to 60 seconds to theme your site in SharePoint 2010 to 5 to 15 seconds in 2013. And don't worry, SPD is still around. You can still make awesome master pages in it, and we'll do that later on. So to show you all this new goodness, I'd like to invite up Lionel to show you.
All right. Thank you for the introduction. So what we're going to take a look at in this part of the session is I'm pretty sure most of you have already seen theming work. How many have you seen it? If you were at the keynote, you probably saw it already. Of course, this is a dev talk, so we're going to go behind the scenes and to go step by step and see how all the little bits come together and how everything works under the hood. We're going to take a look at color palettes and font schemes. So we're going to look at the new file formats, how to edit them, how to create your own, where you can find out-of-the-box files, and which is pretty much where you put them so you can use your own. We're going to take a look at composed looks, which pretty much bring together all the components of a look. So you can define your own, change the ones that come out of the box, and set up different composed looks for your users to use. And in the end, we'll take a look at the theme slot tool, which is going to enable us to create our own custom palette with a visual UI. So with that, let's go ahead and dive into a demo. So this is an out-of-the-box theme site. We haven't done much with it except for specify that the title for the site is theming. I'm going to go ahead and go to the change the look UI. You can get to there through what's your style, or you can get to there through the site actions menu, which says change the look. Let's go ahead and use the tile. And right now, we're just going to go through a quick walkthrough for those of you who haven't seen it. The starting point, the first step is the starting points. This gives you a sense of what the theming engine is capable of. Pretty much, you can change the layout of your site, you can drastically change the colors, you can have your optional background image. So let's go ahead and choose characters. And I'm just going to go ahead and click try it out. So this is my favorite part. This is where the magic is happening. So what's happening behind the scenes after I click try it out is we're grabbing a copy of all the CSS of the site, transforming it, and in doing so, we're changing the colors, we're changing the font declarations, and we're also recoloring all the images that are referenced in that CSS. So now we have your live preview. This is your content, the homepage of the site that you're theming, with the color selections and pretty much all the selections that you had. It hasn't been applied yet. This is just temporary. So here you can say, no, I don't like it, and go back and keep on tweaking, or you can just click keep it. In this case, let's go ahead and click keep it. By doing so, we're not running the theming engine again. We're just using the CSS that was created for that live preview and making the swap for the site. So really quick, really easy, four easy steps. You can get from the out-of-the-box look to something that is drastically different. Really easy to use. So now that we've pretty much gone through the quick walkthrough, let's go through it step by step and see how it's actually put together. So the first step, which is the design gallery. This is a custom client-side rendering of a list that you can get to through site settings. So let's go ahead and see what that list looks like. So go to site actions, site settings. Under web designer galleries, we have the list composed looks. Let's go ahead and go there. So it's really just a simple list. Each list item has the name and four fields that you have to fill out. Two of them are optional. The ones that aren't are what master page you want to use, what color palette you want to use, and then you have the option of specifying the background image and the font scheme. All we need is the URLs, and it's really easy to add your own. You can change the ones that come out of the box. You can reorder them. If you don't like some of the ones that come out of the box or you don't think they're appropriate for your users, you can just remove them or add your own and have like your own set of branded composed looks that people can use. So let's go back. This is also a great example of client-side rendering, custom client-side rendering used out of the box. So let's go ahead and click current. The current item, every time that you theme a site, we're going to refresh that specific list item, which reflects exactly what you have already applied. So you can build off of that if you want to keep on tweaking. So now that we're at the step, we can truly make this our own by playing with four levers. The first of them is the background image. So let's go ahead and grab our own background image, one that I have on a desktop. You can go ahead and drop it on. So what's happening there is we're automatically uploading that to the site assets library of the site, so we can render it in the instant preview that you have on the right, on the bottom right. Now let's take a look at the next lever. this is a really playful one, one that I love doing. I love demoing. On Hover, we're showing you what all those color palettes pretty much could look like on your site. Where it's taking these color palettes, it's grabbing them from the theme gallery of the root site of the site collection. Now it's only showing you three colors, and we're gonna show you later how you can define which of the color slots that are available in the palette are shown to render the item. So let's go ahead and choose one. I like this one. The next one is site layout. So what you're choosing through site layout, also we show you the difference between the two on Hover, is in essence the master page. And where it's pulling it from is from the master page gallery of the specific site. And what master pages are shown are only those master pages that exist in that master page gallery that have the accompanying preview file. Jonathan is going to show us later on how to create one of those preview files. And pretty much the reason why we need that preview file is to render this instant preview that you're looking at. So it's basically just instant string replacement to change the colors, to change the fonts, so you can get a really gratifying view of exactly, not exactly, but pretty much how that color palette or how the selections are going to look on your site. So let's go ahead and choose Oslo. It has a different layout. I like that master page because it shows a little bit more of the image. On the bottom, the last lever that we get to play with is fonts. So for fonts, one of the most exciting things that we get to show you guys is that you can actually use web fonts in your font schemes. So you're no longer tied down to just selecting web safe fonts that are guaranteed to be on everyone's computer. So you can really add a lot of personality through typography. So let's go ahead and select Century Gothic. Click Try It Out. Again, this is where we make the copy of the CSS. It's saved to the content database, transformed. All the colors are changing. All the font declarations are changing. And we're adding the optional background image that we selected. So let's go ahead and keep it. So now we have a site that is truly our own. We played around with the selections that were available out of the box. And it's really unique, and it reflects the personality of our team. So with that, let's go back and dive into each of these parts. Thank you. So to recap, what's in the look? We have the four pieces, the color palette, the font scheme, the site layout, and the background image. The two that are required always are the color palette and the site layout, which is the master page and its accompanying preview file. Very important that you have that file so we can render it in the UI. One thing that I did forget to mention for the background image, for the files that we do support are JPEG, BMP, PNG, and GIF. And especially interesting for JPEG and BMP, you don't have to worry about big files being uploaded, because we do automatic compression and scaling of that image to make sure it's a decent size so it won't affect performance of future page loads. So let's take a look into color palettes. So the main thing to know about color palettes is that as Wes mentioned in the earlier talk, we're not using the ThemeX file format that we used in SharePoint 2013. And there's a couple reasons why we moved away from that, and we'll see that exactly right now. So what we are using is a simple XML format. The only thing that you need to edit color palettes now are basically your favorite text editor. What's in a color palette? The main thing is 89 color slots. Now, this isn't 89 specific colors that you need to define. It's not a rainbow of 89 colors. You're going to be repeating colors in these color slots, so it gives you the flexibility of saying which accent colors you want to use and where in the UI you actually want them to light up. So it gives you a lot of flexibility of being able to create different looks using the same colors as well. For each color slot, you have the name and you have the value specified in hexadecimal. Also for color slots, since there's 89 of them, we really want to help you understand where they're going to be used. So we use semantic names for each and every one of them. Examples of what you can find in the palette file are body text, sweet bar background, selection background, you have button border, button background, button border on hover. So it really, by looking at the name of the color slot, you can really get a sense of where that's going to be used. So by changing that color value, you're going to know how that's going to affect your site. Also new to SharePoint 2013 and really lights up designs is you can specify the opacity value for a color right in our color palette. And don't let me hold you back. So the reason for this is obviously if you're playing around with different colors, you really don't want that opacity value to be defined in CSS and not with that color, because for different colors, you really need different opacity values to get the desired effect. The best example for this is the overlay that we put in front of the background image to increase legibility of text. For white, you're really not going to use the same opacity value that you used for black. It really gives a different effect, and it doesn't let that text be legible using the same forced opacity value. And the way you would specify them in our color slot file is using 8-digit hexadecimal values. The first two digits are going to specify the alpha channel. So along with all the 89 color slots, there's a little bit of metadata that we need you to provide. The first one is, like I mentioned before, we use three slots to render each item in the color picker. So you're going to be able to tell us by name which of those slots in the 89 represent your palette. We also have the concept of inverted flag. So we do in 2010, if you played around with theming in 2010, you know that for each color slot, you have a set of generated shades that go along with it. And you could use those shades in CSS. You can still use them in 2013. They're still available for you. But we do have the 89 color slots that are really specific and really specifically used in our CSS, so you can get the true color that you wanted. So what the inverted flag is going to do is basically you can categorize color palettes in two different groups. You have your light color palettes, which are dark text on the light background, and you have dark color palettes, which are light text on Awesome. So it's light text on a dark background. So if you set the inverted flag to true, you're telling us that it's generally a dark theme. And what that's going to change is how those generated color values are going to be generated for each of our color slots. As you can see on the example, for dark themes, you really need lightest to actually be a darker color, because what you really want is a subdued text. So it kind of the consistency of what is subdued and what really pops on the screen remains when in changing colors. So this is what a color palette looks like. We also saw this in Wes's talk. So at the top, you have the metadata, the two pieces that we mentioned. You have the inverted flag, which is true or false. You have the preview slot 1, 2, and 3, which all we need is the name of the color slot to be able to know which one we want to use to render the item in the picker. And for each of the slots, we have the name and the hexadecimal value. Really plain and really simple. So now that we saw color palettes, let's take a look at what font schemes look like. Again, we're using simple XML format. All you need is the text editor of your choice to be able to modify and create one of your own. They're also separate from color palette files. So you can have your own set of color palette files, and you can have a separate set of font schemes. So that enables us to let you mix and match in the second step of the theming experience, where you can play around with the levers. So we have 7 font slots, which range from title, navigation, small heading, all the way down to large body. Again, using semantic naming to give you the sense of just looking at the name of the font slot, we know title, that's for the title of the site, body, that's for our general body text size. Additionally, for each of the slots, you can specify what font you want to use for different language scripts. This is really important for sites that we want to use in different languages. You're probably going to need a font that has a different character set support for that language. So you can really have four separate font schemes, fonts that really match that specific scheme that has the character set support that you need for a given language. Again, like I mentioned before, we're really excited to let you know that web fonts are supported. So without web fonts, you were stuck to choosing between all the website fonts that are guaranteed to be on every client computer. If not, they weren't going to be able to see the page rendered as it was designed. With web fonts, pretty much you can use any font that's available as long as you have access to the web font file. So you can really go wild, add a lot of personality to the site via typography. So what do you need to do to be able to use web fonts in the theming experience? There's a couple things that you need to give us. You need to give us URLs to the 4 web font files. And the reason we need all 4 is for cross-browser support. Not all browsers use the same font file. We also need a large preview image and a small preview image. The reason we need these images is that for the font scheme picker, we don't want to trigger a download of each and every font scheme right when you open that picker, because we do render, we do want to show you in each of the items what that font actually looks like. So this is where we're going to use, for example, for Century Gothic, that's actually an image that's being used to render that item. So that's where we use those files. And for this picker specifically, on the rest of them, you actually saw instant changes on hover. For this one, we don't, because when you click that specific font scheme that you want to try, that's when we trigger the download, if necessary, of the web font files to be able to render it instantly in that instant preview. So another sample of code. This is what a font scheme looks like. This is not using web fonts. So all you do is specify for the font slot that has a given name. You tell us a typeface for each script. The Latin is the fallback. And for each script, you can give us a different font typeface name. And this is what it would look like for if you want to use web fonts. So with web fonts, all we need is the URL to the four files, to the four web font files. And we need the URL to the large image and to the small image. So with that, let's go into a demo of creating our own custom look. So to set the stage, let's say we have this site. It's already themed, but we added our own custom logo, and it doesn't really match the colors. And this is a common situation when you already have a logo that has your team's brand, and we add it to the site, and it doesn't really match. And we do provide 30-plus different color palettes that you can use, but there might be the case that you want to use that specific color. So let's see how we can do that. So to start, let's go ahead and check where these color palettes are found. So let's go to the root site of the site collection. And to find out where they are, let's go to site settings. And under web designer galleries, we go to the theme gallery and in the 15 folder. So this is the folder where you're going to find all of the out-of-the-box font schemes and all of the out-of-the-box color palettes. The easiest way to create your own, grab one of these that's already there, save it to your desktop, edit it, open it in your favorite text editor, make the changes, upload it back up, and you'll be able to use it in the theming experience. So let's go ahead and open one that I already have on my desktop. So this is Orange Dark. And this is what it looks like, just like we showed you through the slides, the metadata and all the slots. All we have to do is change the hexadecimal values. Now, in SharePoint 2010, you had the ability to use PowerPoint to create your own palettes. So since we shifted away from using the ThemeX file, we are going to provide you with a tool that we made. It isn't public yet. We're working on making it public. And the best way to find out when it's actually made public is through the SharePoint team blog. So keep tabs on that blog, and we'll instantly make the post of where you can download this tool. So this tool has a lot of nifty features that help you really successfully create your own color palette. You have the previews in the middle, which are actually using the same preview files that we use in SharePoint. So you can also, when creating your own preview file that like Jonathan is going to show us, you can put it in the right folder and you can use this in this tool as well. So it's awesome. So it's using the same. You can group the color palettes on the left. There's different groupings for it. The grouping by color kind of shows you that it's not 89 different colors. Right here we have a set of like 20 groups, which kind of are our set of colors that we use out of the box. So let's go ahead and open this one, which is our main blue color, and let's change the whole group. So let's choose, I want it to be red, but let's make it light. Not that I like this color, but it's a really good example of added functionality. So just like that, we specified the color. It's going to change all the color slots that fall into that group, and we can save that if we like it. But if we refresh this little list down here, it's actually checking contrast ratio with a lot of different combinations. I lost count of how many combinations we're actually tracking, but it's over 100. The reason we need this is you really have to keep tabs of what the text color is going to be behind the expected, on top of the expected background color that's going to be behind it. And with opacity values, it's not just that one-to-one, one slot to another slot. It's really the text with all the whole stack of layers that are behind it, because they could have opacity values in it. So you have to get the blend of all those different colors that you're defining, and then do the contrast ratio trick between the two. Now, to be truly accessible against the guidelines, you need to have a 4.5:1 ratio. So anything that's under that, we're going to generate a warning. This is just guidance, so you don't have to follow it to heart, but it is a good general sense. If you get too close to 1:1, you're really defining something that is truly not legible. For example, this pink and the white text that's on top of it that's going to appear for the suite navigation. So let's go ahead and change that back. And let's change that to red, but I want it darker. And then we hit refresh, and all our contrast ratio issues are resolved. So with that, let's go ahead and open that color palette file that we had on the desktop. So it was orange dark. So this is our color palette that we're going to tweak. So I'm going to show you how you can easily recolor this palette based off a logo that you already have. So let's open them side by side. I'm going to click this button. I'm going to use an eyedrop tool to pick a color off of here. And I don't want that bold yellow. I actually want like a golder tone. Let's choose that one. So I'm going to click OK, and I'm going to click Recolor. So now the whole color palette is actually recolored based off of the color that we just picked. Also, using this tool, we can, now that we've recolored it, the recolor math that we're using isn't perfect, but we have this additional preview that comes with the tool that kind of shows us all the general set of UI that comes out in SharePoint. So for example, if we go down, disable text, we don't really want that to be purple. So let's change this to UI groups. And it's one of our text slots. So this is disabled text. Let's use the same color as subtle. So I fix that one. Keep on going down. All the navigation items, all the different type of text, all the accent colors that are available, what tiles look like, buttons. We really don't want blue text for buttons. Let's go change that. So let's collapse this guy. Open up buttons. These are all the slots that are related to buttons. A lot of slots for buttons. Those are really, you can really fine-tune these. So let's use the same other text. So let's fix that guy. And so we've pretty much gone through it. We like what we see. Let's go ahead and save that. Control S. Let's call it Contoso Colors. And hit save. So let's minimize this guy. We already have the theme gallery open in a new tab. Was this other one? So we have Contoso Colors, which is the one that we just created. Let's drag that guy in. So now it's going to be available in the theming UI. So let's go back to change the look on our site. Let's go to current. And it's right there. So quick and easy, we created our own custom color palette. It's going to match our logo. It's going to match our brand. So with that, let's see, a couple seconds. We can come back to this later when you change. So I'm going to hand it off back to Jonathan. So we saw theming. Now let's go look at theming through the other side to make a themeable master page.
Thanks, Lionel. So I want to shift gears now. So far, we've seen how to make custom theme components. But what about making master pages that work with theming? So that's what we're going to cover next. So in SharePoint 2013, there are three file types to think about when you're building a custom master page. There is, of course, the master file itself, one or more CSS files that go along with that master page to describe styles, and finally, a new preview file that's used in the theming experience, as Lionel showed. Enough of the slides. Let's go to a demo. So I am going to go to my handy-dandy trusty SharePoint Designer. And I will go ahead and open up a master page. Now, the plan for this part is to take our existing Seattle.master, create a new copy of it and add a footer. It's a pretty common customization you might want to do. So I'm going to find that file over here in all files. And it's going to take its time because the network's fantastic. Almost there. Go to catalogs, master page, and here we go. So the first step here is I'm going to start with Seattle.master. I'm going to copy and paste and make a new copy of Seattle.master. And so we'll rename this, make it something a little more apt. So let's call it Vegas.master. So let's go ahead and open this file and start making our customization. So the first thing we want to do to make a good custom master page is add a reference to a CSS file so we can add some additional styles. So I'm going to go down here right after the normal reference to core v15.css and add my own extra customization. So here's the line I've just added. It's a CSS registration control. And we're going to point it at the style library in the root of the site collection and at a new file called vegas.css. So before we do anything else, we should go and make this file. So I will go over here to the style library. And we need to make a couple of folders here. So the first folder we need to make is for our language. If you're making a master page, you can have multiple language folders and have a different style sheet per language. This is especially useful for languages like Hebrew and Arabic, where you need right to left. So I'll make one for ENUS. We'll create that folder, navigate into it. Now, the second folder I need to create within it is called Themable. Now, this is really important, and it's a point I really want to drive home. The theming engine runs by looking for CSS files in a well-known set of locations. So when you run through the theming engine, it's grabbing CSS files from underscore layouts, both in the localized and the unlocalized folders in the themable folder within them. And it also looks in the style library, but specifically in this themable folder. If you put your CSS files outside of this themable folder, they will not be themed by the engine. Sometimes that's OK. If your CSS is really just shouldn't be themed, it's OK to leave it out of here. But in this case, we want to make our file themable, so I'm going to put it inside. So let's make a new CSS file. And we'll give it a matching name, vegas.css. And the file exists now, so we're good to go. So now let's go back to the .master file and actually add that footer. So I'm going to scroll down to the bottom here through all our lovely controls and get to this div here called content box. Now, we'll look inside of it. It's got things like the status bar and the main content placeholder. So this gives us a pretty good idea that our footer should go underneath this. So I'll drop to the end of that div and insert a footer box. So all I did here was add a div. I gave it an ID. Let's put some stuff inside of our footer, though, that might typically be in a footer. So one thing you see in a footer a lot is a little logo image of some sort. So I'll add one of those. Now you'll notice this isn't your typical image control. This is a new control we're shipping in SharePoint 2013 called Themed Foreground Image. So in SharePoint 2010, we supported recoloring images when you themed your site so that even background images across the site would get the new colors. But we didn't really support foreground images, images that you'd put on your page with an image tag. So with this control, we unlock that capability. So Themed Foreground Image is just a simple subclass of the ASP.NET image control. Most of the properties are pretty similar. You got your run at, image URL to tell us where to get the image, height, width, that sort of thing. But then there's this additional property called theme key. Theme key is just a simple string. It needs to be unique, and it gives us a reference so that we can tie this control and some code we're going to add later to the CSS file together to tell the engine how to theme this image. And then we've got some alternate text and a CSS class. So next thing you might want in your footer is some text. So I'll add a little bit of text, just a span. It's got some text in it. And we're good. We have a footer. So I'll go ahead and save. SharePoint Designer is going to ask me if I want to customize the master page file from its site definition. So I'll say yes. And we've made our change. So now we need to move on to the third file type that we talked about, the .preview file. So just like we did for the master file, I'm going to start from one that's built in. So I'm going to grab Seattle.preview, and I'll copy it and paste it. And I'll give it a matching name. Now, it's really important that the name is the same and has the right extension. So we'll call this one Vegas.preview. And let's go edit it. Now, a little gotcha here. When you open the file in SharePoint Designer to edit it, it has a tendency to try to open it in some other program or in some incorrect mode. So go to Open With and choose Program and tell it to open it as text. And I'm just going to set this as default to make it easy next time. So let's walk through the .preview file and see what's inside of it. A .preview file is pretty straightforward text file. It's got four sections divided by this section delimiter. So the first section here is the name or the file name of the default color palette. So in all of our master pages, they have a color palette associated with them that describes the colors that are used in the default CSS state. So for example, in most of our master pages, it's this palette 001.spColor that has, you know, the typical grays and blues that we use across SharePoint. The second section here is the default font scheme, same idea, but for fonts. These are important because if you were to set the master page for the site, we need to show you in that little current item on the first page of the theming experience what the site looks like. So we reference this file and use that color palette and that font scheme to show you what it would look like. The third section here is tokenized CSS. It's pretty much the same as CSS. We just have some interesting tokens that I'll talk about in a moment. And way down after our big blob of CSS is some tokenized HTML. So now that we've seen all this, let's go ahead and add the footer box to the .preview file as well. So I'm going to go down here right under the content box, just like we did in the .master file, and add a section. And it's pretty similar to what we put in the .master file, a little bit different. It's a div. It's got a class instead of an ID. This is really important that you use classes instead of IDs because, as you saw in the theming experience, the first page has lots of tiles that show you possible looks that you can choose from. And these preview files are used to generate each one. If you were to use IDs here, of course, there'd be collisions. So please use classes in this case. Inside of there, we've just got a logo and our footer text. We're using some simple text here because, of course, this could be applied to any site with different content. So I'm going to go ahead and save. It's going to ask me again if I want to customize it. I'll say yes. And let's see what this looks like so far in the browser. So here's my site. I'm going to go to the Change the Look UI. And it'll load the view, and we'll go to Current. And now if we drop down Site Layout, we'll see we have a third option called Vegas. Now, you'll see this doesn't quite look right yet. Our footer is kind of off over here to the right. But for now, let's just ignore that and move on. We'll show to the design preview. And my monitor's a little small here, but I'll keep it so you can see the full page. You'll see that we do have a footer, but it's kind of in the middle of the page. It doesn't quite look like a footer. And our image, since it's a white image, is just white on white. It doesn't really show up. So clearly, we have some work to do. We need to style this. So how are we going to style it? Well, obviously, we're going to use our CSS file. So I'll open up the CSS file we created before and start adding some styles in. So I'm going to cheat and use snippets, but I'll talk through them. We're going to style the footer box, give it a height, give it a width so it takes up the full width of the page. We'll give it some padding so the text isn't kind of shoved in there. I'm going to use position fixed so that it's docked on the page and doesn't move around as we scroll. I'm going to position it on the bottom and left of the page, so it'll be all the way at the bottom of the page. We'll use Z-index to make sure it appears on top of all other content. Of course, you can do any sort of customization you want here. This is just the example I chose. And we'll give it a background color and a font color. So now we'll add a couple more styles. We'll style our logo, align it middle. I'm going to give it a margin right so that it's not butted up against the text. And finally, we'll add a style for the text so that it's aligned right. So far, this isn't rocket science. We're just adding some styles. So that's it. We'll save that. And I will go back up to here. And important note, of course, the style sheet's in the style library, and so we need to check it in before our changes will be visible. So I'll do a quick check-in. Checked in now, so we can go back to our browser, refresh. And there we go, we have a footer. So that was pretty easy. We've got a footer, looks pretty good, but we're missing something. So far, this footer is just blue background, white text. And if we change the theme of the site, it's still going to be blue background and white text. And of course, that won't look very good. So we need to make sure that this is themable. So we'll go back to SharePoint Designer and keep on doing. Let's go to the edit file, or edit the file here. Maybe.
And the ribbon.
So if you've used theming in SharePoint 2010, this will look pretty familiar. We've got our two color properties here, and we want to annotate them to tell the theming engine what to do with them when it comes time to theme. So I'm going to annotate this one. And I'll explain the annotation. Our annotations are just CSS comments. They're specially formatted, so when we run through, when the engine runs through the file, it sees this annotation, parses it, and handles it accordingly. So I'm going to use the replace color annotation. And I'm going to tell it to use the sweet bar background slot. So we're going to match that bar, the blue bar on the top of the page. No matter what color it changes to, the footer should follow suit. I'll do the same thing down here for the text color. Same idea, replace color. We're going to use sweet bar text. So far, we've styled the background color and the text color, but there's still that logo. And if you'll remember, in the HTML, we used that new themed foreground image control. So now we need to do the other half of the job. So on the bottom here, I'm going to add a new class. I'm going to call this foreground images. And I'm going to give it a property of background image. Now, what's important to know about this class is that it's not going to be used anywhere on any visual elements. We're not applying this to any elements. We're really just putting it here to hitch a ride, so to speak, with the CSS file. Because the theming engine operates on CSS files and CSS files alone, when this file is being read by the theming engine, it's going to see this declaration and the associated annotation that I'm about to add and know how to make a themed copy of that image. So I've just used a background image property here. It's not super important which property you use. I'm using background image so that it's still syntactically correct to CSS. Just like above, we're going to add an annotation. And this is a long one, so I'll walk through it piece by piece. We're going to use a recolor image annotation. We had this in SharePoint 2010, but we've got some newness for the foreground image case. We'll give it a theme color. In this case, we want our logo image to be the same color as the text. And then comes this detach property. So this needs a little bit of explanation. As an optimization in the theming engine, when we're theming images across your CSS files, we're going to make one copy of that image per way that you theme it. That way, if you have, you know, one background image gradient and you theme it the same way 50 times in your CSS, we're not making 50 different themed copies of that image. For foreground images, though, this doesn't quite apply because it's a separate image. We want to theme it in separate ways. And mostly as a technical detail, we can't necessarily do as much disambiguation between them. So to get around that, we're going to tell it to detach. And that means don't worry about that optimization. Just always create a new themed copy of this image when you see it. Our third property here is the method. For the method, we have three options: filling, tinting, and blending. This isn't new for 2013. We had this in 2010. And it really just describes how to apply the color to the image. In this case, I'm going to use filling because the image is just white. So we're going to fill that white with the theme color. But you can look up documentation online from 2010. It'll show you how the other two look. And the final property here is hash override. This corresponds to the theme key property that we saw on themed foreground image. All that you need to do here is use the exact same string you did on the master file. So now that we've added this annotation, we've got a connection between the themed foreground image control and the CSS. We can go ahead and save this. Second time always works. And it'll save up to SharePoint. And then just like before, we need to make sure that we check in and publish this file. It's really important that you publish your files. Oh, come on. Nope. Ah. One more time.
It's not checked out.
Oh, it's not checked out. Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Do-do-do. No, don't save it. Check out. There we go. And it kept my changes, so now I can save. Yes, I want to replace the file. Awesome. So as I said, we need to make sure that we check in and publish. So we'll go to check in. We'll say we want to publish a major version, click OK. And now we have the file. So we have one more thing to change. So far, we've added styles to our CSS file, but we still have that .preview file sitting around, and it hasn't gotten any of the goodness. So let's go ahead and move our styles over there. Now, the easiest way that I've found to do this is to start from the styles inside the CSS file. So I'm just going to copy all of these, go back to our preview file, scroll up to the end of the CSS section, and I'm just going to paste these in. Now, of course, you'll notice that these look a little different than the rest of the CSS in the preview file, so we need to make some changes. So the first thing we need to make sure is that every selector is prepended with the ID token. This is really important because, like I said, these preview files can be used on a page where there are a bunch of them on the same page. So in the first page of the theming experience, we show a lot of different tiles, and the ID selector will disambiguate between them so that the individual color palettes that we're applying only map to one tile at a time. So I'll add ID to each of these. Next thing we need to do is change our selectors. So as you'll remember, in the HTML part of the preview file, we didn't use IDs, we used classes. So for this one, I've got footer box. I actually changed it in this case, so I'm using dot for a class, and I'm going to call it DGP footer box. DGP just stands for Design Gallery Preview. It's not required. I'm just trying to be consistent with the rest of the file. So I'll make that change across to all these other ones. Great. Next thing we need to do is look at the measurements that we're using here. So the first one you'll see is a pixel. Problem is that these preview files can be used at multiple sizes. So in the first page of the theming experience, we have the really small thumbnail view. And then in the second page, we've got the larger view, so you can really see what your master page is going to look like. So we need to change all these absolute values to be relative values instead. Now, the easiest way I've found to do this is to use just a calculator and say a default browser or a reference browser size is about 1024 by 768. It's at least a good, you know, reference. So I'm going to open my calculator here and say that we've got a height of 32 pixels. 32 pixels over a typical size of about 768 high gives us about 4%. So it's a ballpark. I'm just going to change this to be 4%. Our width is already a percent, so we're good to go there. We've got the padding. So we have 8 pixels for top and bottom. Now, we already know that 4% is 32 pixels, so a quarter of that is 1% for 8 pixels. And then for 20 pixels, once again to the calculator, 20 pixels over a default width of about 1024 gives us about 2%. You can kind of fudge these numbers, mess with them, go do some guessing and checking, and get your preview file to look the way you want it to. For the positions, since they're 0% and 0 pixels is the same thing, so I'm not going to bother to change those. And our last value here is 10 pixels. So we saw up above that 20 pixels is 2%, so 10 pixels must be 1%. So we're done with measurements. Next thing we need to do is change our position. So I used fixed before because I didn't want my footer to move around on the page when we scrolled. But for these preview files, we don't really have to worry about that. We're never really scrolling these. So I'm going to change it to absolute. So then we've got our colors. And you'll notice that these color rules look a little different than the rest of them in the preview file. This is because we're not running the theming engine against the preview file. We're just doing some simple string replacement in JavaScript to show you what the colors would look like. So instead of using CSS annotations for the preview file, we're just going to use color tokens. And I'll show you what that looks like. So I'm going to get rid of this annotation. and I'm just going to replace the color here with a token. So for our color tokens, they're pretty much always T theme color followed by the name of the slot. So this one was sweet bar background. Same thing for text. We'll get rid of the annotation. T theme color, sweet bar text. So then we come to our foreground image. Now, as you'll remember from the CSS file, we're using the foreground image class here just as a way to hitch a ride so that the theming engine knows how to recolor that foreground image. But for the preview file, we don't need that. So we can actually just get rid of this whole selector here. So I've made my changes. I can go ahead and save this file. And let's go back to the browser to see what we've done. So I'll refresh. And it looks exactly the same. That's good. We haven't made any changes. But let's go and try to theme it. So I'll go to the theming UI. And you'll notice pretty quickly, hey, now we have a footer on the preview file. Looks pretty good in the thumbnail view. Looks pretty good on the full view as well. So I'm going to go ahead and change my color palette. I like this green one, so I'll pick that. And look, our footer changes colors. So that's cool. So I'll hit try it out. Again, we're under the hood. We're taking copies of all our CSS files, including the one we just created in the themeable path. We're transforming all the color lines that are annotated, all the fonts that are annotated. We can add a background image if it was used in this case. And we're recoloring images. We're saving all those files out to the content database. So as soon as this is done generating, we'll see what that looks like in a live preview. Almost there. There we go. So we'll load up the preview, and there we go. So we've got a colored footer. Our themed foreground image did indeed theme. It changed from white to green. So I'll keep it. And the site will refresh and use the new colors. So there we go. Let's go back to the slides and talk about a few tips and gotchas. So as we said, theming snapshots your CSS. It takes a copy of all the CSS that ships out of the box and all your custom CSS and saves it to the database. That means, though, that if you make any changes to your CSS after the site's been themed, the copies that we've stored are stale. And so the site needs to be rethemed. Now, you can do this either via UI, just by going through the experience and leaving all the same values you had before, or you can do it via code if you have any sort of custom solutions. Secondly, preview files are important. Without it, your master page won't show up in the theming experience. Now, it's OK if you build a master page and you don't want your users to see it in the theming experience yet. You can either omit the preview file, or you can just give it a different file name, and we won't show it there. Next, make sure to mind your check-ins and publishing status. Just like I showed for the CSS file, your theme components, CSS, the color palettes, font schemes, SP theme files, which we didn't talk about, that just aggregate the other parts, the other theme components, those all must be checked in and published. Otherwise, the engine is going to just grab the last published version, not the draft you have changed. Next, the themed file location can vary. So as we said, the engine is going to make copies of those CSS files, it'll transform them, and it stores them in the content database. But it stores them in different places based on which SKU of SharePoint you have installed. So in the majority of cases, in SharePoint Server and in Office 365, we're going to store those files in the theme gallery within the themed subfolder. And if you actually open this up on your install, you'll see that there's a bunch of folders inside of there that all have a little hash applied to them. This just keeps those folders being unique. And inside there, you'll see all your transformed CSS. In SharePoint Foundation, we store these files in the underscore themes folder on the site. It's not accessible via UI, but you can get to it in SharePoint Designer. And this brings me to my next point, inheritance. So theme settings can be inherited as long as you have publishing enabled. You can go to the master page section of site settings. And in 2013, there's a little section you can open up on that page for themes. And you have the option to make a site inherit from its parent, or to push down the site's theme settings all the way to all its children. What's cool here is that with inheritance, we're not making copies of all the, or we're not retheming all the sites under it. We're actually just pointing those sites to the themed files of the parent site. So here's some more info. We've got a blog post that Lionel wrote on the SharePoint team blog. It's got lots of information about how the experience works. It talks about all these XML file formats and what it takes to make one. We've got some documentation on MSDN for the API methods, some documentation on the theme annotations in SharePoint 2010. There's not an article on 2013 version yet. Not much has changed with the annotations, so this is a great place to start. Keep an eye on the SharePoint team blog. We'll announce over there when the theme tool that Lionel showed will be available. And we promise there's more documentation to come. I just reviewed some at work last week, so I know it's coming, and that'll be really useful. There's some related sessions. Of course, all of these have already happened. There's how to get started with sites in SharePoint. That gives you a great idea of how site owners can get started with their sites. There's building out great app UI. It covers making your apps look and feel like the sites they're in. And finally, building apps that take advantage of the new UX platform components in SharePoint 2013 covers other UX platform features that we've got to let you build really cool custom solutions in SharePoint. And another quick plug for Ask the Experts, which is going on next down in Bayside C. Lionel and I will be there, and we'd be happy to take your questions. But for now, let's move on to Q&A. There's microphones all over the place, so please come to those, and we'll answer questions.
Let us know if you're out of microphone, because it's a really big room, and because of those lights, we can't see you either.
So, quick question. Sure. Is ghosting and unghosting still happening? I'm assuming from the walkthrough that it was changing it from the site definition, so it is serializing it and then placing it into the content database. Is that correct?
Yes. So ghosting and unghosting is still there. You saw us. I went and unghosted each of those files. When I made a copy of Seattle.master, it pointed to the same underlying file in the file system.
And is it true for all of the infrastructure items? So, of course, the master page, but then the preview and the theme and the CSS and everything like that is all being ghosted and unghosted. There are no exceptions to that rule when editing in SharePoint Designer?
It's generally true, yeah. You can even go and unghost files like the SP color and SP font files because those are in the theme gallery. So if you wanted to make changes to one of our out-of-box ones.
Yeah, is it possible to distribute these themes through the application or app store?
I guess the answer is sorta. I don't know that there is an easy way with apps to put the color scheme or color palettes and font schemes in the right place.
Right.
It's something that we know about and we'd love to do. We're just not there yet. But of course, you can make these color palettes and font schemes. They're just XML. So you can either make a feature for on-prem cases to deploy them to the right place, or just have those XML files and say, here, put them in this folder, and they'll be available.
Okay, thanks.
Maybe it's a little bit related to what you answered now. If I were to deploy it from development UAT to production, what is the easiest way to do it?
Let me make sure I understand your question. You want to deploy these color palettes and font schemes as part of a solution?
As well as what you did, the master page, for example.
Yeah, so you could definitely make a solution that just puts the files in the right place. The only two places you need to think about, really, are the master page gallery and the theme gallery. So you can put the files in there, and the theming experience UI keeps track of the last edit time of those galleries and refreshes its data. So as soon as those files are in there, your users will see them.
Do you have any documentation on that?
It would be the same documentation as normal, you know, creating features to put files up in document libraries on SharePoint.
All right. Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
Got a quick question for you. During the opening session, they said you can now use like Dreamweaver, whatever you want to add at the master pages. How do you actually get to those? Is it just dragging and dropping them into the master page gallery, or is there actually a way to tie into it dynamically so you can do it from the editor?
I'm sorry, to do which part with the master pages?
Just to edit the master page.
So you can, if you want to edit a out-of-box master page, of course, SharePoint Designer is the best tool because it can handle the ghosting and unghosting. If you want to just make a copy, you can definitely just go into the document, into the master page gallery, download a copy, open it up in whatever text editor you want, make changes, and drag and drop it back in. The Design Manager in Publishing is also a great tool for this. Their system will absolutely work with theming, so you can take your HTML files, throw them in there, convert them to .master files, and then just make the appropriate changes to your CSS files to annotate for theming, and it should work.
Thank you.
Yep.
So I'm still trying to understand the design manager.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't talk too much about that. But what I was wondering about was the case where maybe I have a custom master page, but on my team, there's other individuals who want to make versions of master pages. Is the HTML to master a good solution for that situation?
It's certainly an option. So when you drop an HTML file into the master page gallery, or well, through the design manager with publishing enabled, it makes a one-to-one relationship between the HTML file you dropped in and the .master file it created. And of course, it even goes and locks the .master file. So the only way you can edit it is by editing the HTML file. Of course, you still have that HTML file. So you could make multiple copies of it and run the design manager again. I don't know if that's necessarily the best way of handling it for a broad group of users who want to make changes. But I'd encourage you to go to ask the experts after this and chat with folks at the ECM table, the content management folks and website folks, because they built that feature and will know a lot more than I do about it.
Can I ask real quick clarification? If I turn on the design manager, does that make the HTML copies?
I think so, but okay. I'm not positive. I know when you make a publishing site, it starts with those out of the box. I'm not positive if you turn the design manager on, if that happens. But well, I'm pretty sure we ship out of the box Seattle.html and Oslo.html, and I think they ship a few more with their templates.
Yeah, that's a good start for me. Thanks.
Yeah.
I have a question regarding the inheritance that you mentioned towards the end.
Sure.
So if child sites are created, does it automatically inherit the theme, or does someone have to go in and change it?
Yeah, so this is it's pretty much the same inheritance we had in 2010, and it's much like all the other inheritable properties when you have publishing enabled.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe when you create a new site, it does not. Don't quote me on that. I encourage you to try it.
Okay.
Of course, you can always either go and push down again, and that push down knows it's smart about the subsites, and it's only going to apply that push down to the sites that haven't gotten the change.
Okay.
Or if you're in an on-premise scenario, you can definitely write code to enforce this, to say hook into an event receiver when sites are created,
right,
and say, hey, go grab the.
Yeah, that's how we were doing it in 2010, but I was wondering if there is a way to automate that in 2013.
Yeah, so that definitely works.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep, sure.
I just had a quick question about the design manager. There's that feature where you can export the, the custom look as a package. How is that different than, building a master page solution? I'm trying to sort of get a sense of, is that more supposed to be a one-off scenario where, oh, these guys over here want to use your same theme, but not really used for mass apply like a solution is for a traditional farm solution?
So the design manager, when you hit export package, it's actually exporting a composed look for all intents and purposes. It has a WSP inside of it, and that has all the appropriate files, including the SP color that you had applied and the SP font, and then you can import those back in. So think of the design manager sort of as a superset of change the look.
So when you do that, are you actually creating a WSP package?
I believe so.
Okay, so that almost replaces or is like a parallel model with sort of building a master page farm solution?
Yeah, I think it just gives you a different UI entry point that's a lot easier to understand. Plus, of course, with the design manager, it's hooking in with their HTML to master page conversion process.
Right.
Also, I believe when you want to re-import those, you don't just drop them into the solution gallery. I think you have to go to the design manager and import them there.
Import them. I can maybe answer my own question. So that WSP package, do you think you could open that in Visual Studio?
Maybe. I think I'd totally suggest you go to ask the experts, talk with the ECM people. They'll know all about this.
Thanks.
Yep.
So the first question is that how to, can I apply the client-side rendering to the master page?
Well, so client-side rendering is something that applies on lists, not so much on master pages. So you can just like we covered in the other session I pointed out, the 028 with John Campbell and I, you can go and make customizations against a list, and those, of course, will work with theming and master pages. It's kind of different levels of hierarchy in SharePoint. You know, the master page file is a higher level of hierarchy than the lists for CSR.
Okay. So the other question is that if I want to customize the like a left navigation or top navigation on the master page, should I use the designer or just modify the CSS, whatever?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the kind of customization you want to do. If, for example, I know some folks like to, you know, have different embellishments on it based on the how like indented the list items are. So in our case, you know, the child's navigation elements are just indented a few pixels. You might want to put a bullet there, for example. Mm-hmm. Totally a great place to use master page customizations.
Mm-hmm. And CSS as well, right? Mm-hmm. Modify the CSS and hide something you don't want to see.
Yeah, you could definitely modify the CSS to do that too. Like we said before, you can either customize one of the out-of-box master pages, or you can kind of grab a copy and make a change there. This is a great opportunity, really, to make additional master pages and, you know, distribute them to the SharePoint community, because I'm sure people would love to see more than two options in the Change the Look UI. You know, we want to encourage not just, you know, different treatments of that background image, but also different nav patterns and other cool layout possibilities.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Just at a high level, is there anything that you did in that master page customization that would have affected the mobile experience?
The mobile experience?
Yeah, so I'm using a mobile device to browse that same site. Is the footer going to show up? Am I even in the right ballpark asking this question?
So there is a feature to handle mobile master pages. It's called device channels. It's something that happens when publishing is enabled. I think there was a talk about it earlier this week. I don't know the number offhand, but you can definitely go and look that up and watch that session, and it'll give you a lot of great detail. The idea is essentially you can point to a different master page file for different user agents. And of course, each of those master page files could be themeable. An important thing to know is that when you apply a theme, it's going to customize all the CSS, not just the CSS that's associated with the master page file you have selected. So if you have, you know, five different channels for five different kinds of devices, when you theme your site, all of them are going to get the new theme.
All right, thanks.
Yep. Anyone else? Great. Well, thanks a lot for coming, whoever's left.